I'm keeping this week's intro short and sweet, as this week I have been mostly having the flu and experiencing temperatures of 38.5 degrees across 5 days in bed. It's also been quite the 24-hour news channel here with the general election run-up and results. Can't let you lock down though, so here we go. Quick announcements. Ovum's future EdTech event takes place next week, Monday to Tuesday, in London on the 13th and 14th of June. It's free for unis, and EdTech podcast listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code edpod/10 for everyone else at the Reg checkout. The EdTech podcast very own event on Is EdTech a Thing?, a live podcast in collaboration with Nesta and supported by Cooley, takes place as part of London EdTech Week on Monday the 19th of June and looks at how we should value EdTech from an educator, legal and investor perspective. It's free, but you do need to register, and the links are in the show notes. Organisations already signed up include City University London, UCL, United Learning, the Royal Society, the Education Endowment Fund and Graveney School. Show My Homework, IBM and Intel, Felicia, Oracle, Third Space Learning and Makematic, Scottish Equity Partners, JP Morgan and CanInvest, the Cabinet Office, Tech North, Department for International Trade, Dutch Embassy and Argentina's Ministry of Culture. And finally, the Telegraph Media Group, TES, South by Southwest EDU and Education Technology. We hope to see you join them all. Back on the Higher Ed Focus, I'll also be chairing an event on everyone's favourite topic of the moment, GDPR. Full Fabrics event, also part of London EdTech Week, takes place at Imperial College on the 22nd of June. And finally, I'm delighted to announce a new media partnership with the Fantastic Association for Learning Technology. The 24th annual conference takes place from the 5th to the 7th of September 2017 at the University of Liverpool, UK, bringing together practitioners, researchers and policymakers from across sectors. The event will collaboratively chart the development of learning technology from isolated islands of innovation to becoming the new norm, and the challenges this entails for staff and learners alike. To check out more, check the links in the show notes at www.theedtechpodcast.libsyn.com, or you can check that also on your iTunes show notes. Phew! Right, this week we have two parts to the podcast, which is based back in the UK. First up, a one-to-one interview with Oliver Beach, former Teach Firster, TES contributor, governor at the time of recording and now head of partnerships at Kano, on the subjects of funding and inspiration and why teaching needs a rebrand. Secondly, to follow, a recording made in March at EdSpace, the home of Emerge Education, to launch the One Mile Project collaboration between Rocket Fund, Nesta and EdSpace. Rocket Fund is the UK version of Donors Choose, which many of you in the US may have heard from. Essentially, it's a crowdfunding platform for teachers to raise up to £1,500. If you go on the Rocket Fund website, you'll see many projects already up, with some having already reached their target, and many still needing assistance from funders. First of all, you'll hear from Ben Gill from Rocket Fund, plus Donna Shah from Newington Green Primary School, talk about the platform and how it works. Next, you'll hear a live podcast recording where I speak to a range of Hackney-based educators and literacy and coding companies to talk about what are the key needs of the secondary and primary sector in Hackney, how can developing edtech companies pilot their products with schools in a way that's meaningful to both, how does Rocket Fund answer the tough initial questions around crowdfunding for schools? And what are the next steps for potential funders and schools? You'll hear from Michelle Thomas, Executive Head at the New Wave Federation of Primary Schools, Martin Buck, the Head of Secondary at Hackney Learning Trust, Ben Payne, Co-Director for the Ministry of Stories, Toby Martin Hughes, Education Product Manager at SAM Labs, and Ben Gill, Product Manager at Nesta and Launch Pilot at the Rocket Fund. A big thank you to our sponsors Class Central, who you'll hear from at the close of the show. I hope you enjoy and do let me know your feedback as always. So we're back at EdSpace. Oliver's asking me hundreds of questions. So we've made ourselves comfortable in a Chesterfield.
Alcove.
Yeah, in an alcove, because it's got good sound benefits to it. So I'm here with Oliver Beach, who, remind me of your job title at Kano.
I'm Learning and Partnerships Manager at Kano.
Fantastic. fantastic. And also an advisor to the Rocket Fund project, which we've been talking about this evening.
Yeah, really, really excited to support an inspiring project which will hope to narrow the gap in opportunity for kids from low-income backgrounds in schools.
And, I mean, how did you get into that? You know, I'm just thinking about, so for you in the last year or so, you must have had quite a year, because, you know, was it a year or a year and a half where you've left your school role that you are so famous about town for, and joined Carno and now working on the advisory board for the Rocket Fund projects. So tell us a little bit about that transition.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I was a teacher for 4 years. I did the Teach First program. And I guess when I decided to leave teaching, there was a real kind of lump in my throat in that I wanted to still be involved heavily in something I'm passionate about, which is education, and specifically about addressing educational disadvantage. And when I was a teacher, I had real frustrations with what I wanted my kids to experience with very limited budget. And I
saw you wrote on the website you thought it was a good project to get involved with because you didn't have the post-it notes authorized.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously an extreme example, yeah. But there are so many things I wanted to do, take my kids on, and you know, even in London, where lots of things are at your doorstep, there's so many hidden costs that you wouldn't foresee and limit what you can do for the kids. So I discovered Donors Choose, which Ben's mentioned this evening, which is an amazing charity in the US. Was connected with their CEO and almost was kind of going down the same route of, I came up with an idea for it to solve disadvantage. I worked for tirelessly whilst I was teaching to set up something similar to Rocket Fund, and discovered lots of sort of stumbling blocks along the way to do that. And while I was doing that, Ben from Nesto reached out and said, I've heard that you're trying to do this idea. I'd love to work with you. And so that kind of presented itself in an amazing opportunity, which is supported by Nesto, which is an amazing organization to help support it. And they have the resources and the people and the expertise to do that. So it made sense to work together. So if I was going to be in an advisory role, I also needed a job. It was just very kind of, I'd say luck, just all kind of fell into place. And I discovered Cano, which is an incredible company with an amazing, inspiring product to narrow the sort of digital gap for young people. And I feel really excited that I'm working in education technology. I'm advising Rocket Fund and its growth, and I'm supporting Founders for Schools, which is also another charity which seeks to help kids become more employable. So really, it's so exciting that I'm having the opportunity to work with some amazing people, amazing companies, and I'm a governor of a school as well, so I'm still connected to young people and education.
So here's an interesting question, which is, we heard from a lot of schools this evening, they were primarily, because of the One Mile Project based in London, obviously, having looked at some of the forums on TES and so on, there often is quite a pushback about, okay, well, of course you're doing the best in the country because you get the most amount of money. And what do you think about this idea of funding and perhaps people outside of London looking in thinking, well, you know, it's okay for them, they get great grades, but, you know, they're getting an increased proportion of the pot, as it were.
Well, I think the fair funding formula, maybe fair is in brackets, but the fair funding formula is going to kind of appropriate funding distribute funding across the country, which will affect schools. I know that the school that I'm a governor of, the budget is going to be significantly affected by the funding changes to London schools. Mm-hmm. So that's the first part. The second part is the opportunities that the teachers are going to raise money for are things that are above and beyond what is currently being offered in schools, because the teachers are putting on projects that really inspire them, that they really want to offer their students. They became teachers because they really wanted to empower young people. And so my goal is that teachers feel really energized and excited to do what they do best, which is offer great opportunities for their kids that will give them higher aspirations, access to more opportunities, and hopefully better achievement. And I think that we're not trying to change the attainment outcomes of Hackney. We're trying to get kids excited and energized by their education.
So sort of more passion projects and that get teachers engaged in teaching again and excited about it.
Really excited about teaching and really inspired by the energy and enthusiasm for education that their kids have as a result of their teacher's creativity.
So moving on.
Lots of E-words there.
So the good stuff there. Written a couple of articles recently for TES, which have, resonated with the community, shall we say. So could you give me a bit of a summary of the two most recent articles and, you know, what your thinking has been? Because I think you strike me as someone that the sort of narrative of education, you like to filter that and have a response and have an opinion on what's going on and not just let it sort of wash over you.
Yeah, I'm quite forthright with my opinions, but ultimately a lot of the opinions are because I really respect teachers. I think it's the most noble profession. I think that they have an incredible power and also an incredible duty to, and under a lot of pressure with that duty. You know, we forget forget workload, forget pay, the pressure that teachers are under to be the catalyst and the creator of a child's future is extraordinary. And a lot of the articles I write are almost kind of passion pieces and often divisive, of course, because there's no one way to educate. And when I was a teacher, I didn't get it all right. But I do have, I do believe in my opinions. I believe that teachers have a responsibility to not just teach the curriculum, but to teach children how to challenge what they hear in the media, how to be responsible citizens, how to respect others, how to develop their employability. These are, kids spend the most amount of time they do in their lives at school. Mm-hmm. You know, Monday to Friday, 8 till 3, it's a lot of time. And under the care of energetic and responsible adults, have a duty to inspire their children. I was reading a really interesting article recently about James Franco and how he said that if it wasn't for his teacher, he wouldn't be the actor he is today. Of course, there are so many of those anecdotes, but they're all true and they're all relevant. And the most recent article I wrote was about how teachers should get more respect. The teaching should be professionalized alongside doctors, lawyers, bankers, because the responsibility and accountability of teachers is extraordinary.
I guess it was last week we had the Chartered College of Teaching event. So did you talk about that in the article, and what were your recommendations to elevate the profession? Because we've had multiple initiatives, everything from the Teacher Development Trust to the Varkey Foundation trying to do this. So what were your recommendations?
It's almost like pulling up my article on my phone just so I remember what I said. My recommendations for the profession were: one, to pay teachers more. I'm not talking about along the lines of JP Morgan banker salaries, because unfortunately teachers are dealt the unfortunate hand where capitalism rules and it's hard to measure the impact of teachers on children's contribution to the economy, for example, or the impact on the economy of teachers. So they're dealt a bad hand. It's, the kids the teachers do have a direct impact on the economy, because kids get good grades, they get good jobs, etc., etc. Sound like a great economics teacher. And so you should pay teachers more. In line, you know, Switzerland, the PPP is $6,000 to $8,000, for example. Mostly private schools, which is ironic, but it's, teachers should get paid more. They should. They should get paid more. It's below, UK is below the OECD average, so that's unacceptable. The second thing is they should invest in the welfare of teachers and realize that
mental health are.
No, I mean, and also, you know, happy teachers make happy students who get better outcomes. Happy teachers don't criticize and moan about teaching to their friends. And the problem is that the current narrative is unbearable workload, funding cuts, we can't get any teachers. That is not painting a good picture of the profession. It is potentially the best profession, one of the best professions in the world, and it needs a rebrand.
I think that's very interesting, because when I do dip in and out of the TES articles, those are definitely the kind of clickbait, I think, that I can sort of see quite
but
visible.
I think I do agree with you that a lot of it sometimes appears to be clickbait, but the, and so I was happy in this article to be more kind of macro and micro. So macro, teachers need more respect. Micro, this is what, one, the government can do about it, and what schools also have to realize, that head teachers need to realize that they could create better cultures in their school. I know schools, I will never name names, but I know schools that check to see what time teachers come in and what time they leave. That is potentially the scariest working condition, and you're also charged with getting results for kids. Otherwise, their futures are
Replicating the old school environment of waiting at the school gates for the children, but with your own staff.
I mean, it's really dangerous, but it's somewhat understandable based on the pressure that head teachers are under. And it's
so, do I need a supply teacher sort of planning themselves their own day as well?
It's trickle down pressure.
And okay, so going back to Rocket Funds.
Yes, please.
And I'm sure we'll put the links into both those articles, because I think it'd be interesting for people to read. So, I mean, what's the kind of next step? So we heard tonight about the 1 Mile project and everything that's happening in Hackney. You know, what's on the radar beyond this initial pilot phase, I suppose?
It's a great question. Next steps for Rocket Fund are very kind of simply twofold. One is there's going to be hopefully lots of demand from schools, from teachers who have great ideas for trips, for resources, for tech, for their kids, and they want to raise money for it. I don't think we're going to have a shortage of demand from teachers. What we do need are businesses, local communities, larger businesses who think, I really want to empower kids in the community in which I work, or I really want to see young people, my business has a real agenda to develop digital skills in young people, and so I want to help that teacher buy edtech products that are out there for their classroom, for example. And that's the call to action. The call to action is to business leaders and local communities and alumni and governors to galvanize their networks, to match fund and give to projects to help young people access opportunities that will inspire them.
And final question, because I know this is going to be a good one. Which are the books, people, or resources that have impacted how you think as a person? So not necessarily in your latter life as an educator or educational stuff, but, you know, books or resources or people that really kind of, when it boils down to it, those have had an impact on how you think and how you carry yourself in your life.
I'm going to be somewhat strange in my answer. In there are two people that inspire the actions I take. One is a comedy actor. So I think that one of the biggest issues, and something I learned at the beginning when I was teaching, is I had a lot of great ideas. I've got this great idea. And none of them really saw fruition. And I think the execution of ideas is the most pertinent thing right now, because we are living in a kind of ideation world. People have got loads of ideas in the cloud. It's fantastic. But nothing... Do they really see the light? Mm-hmm. And do they see the impact? And so I watch a lot of kind of political satire, and watch like The Thick of It and Veep. And I know that sounds ridiculous to be inspired by almost kind of ineffective government satire, but it kind of daily reminder of how inept people don't get things done despite the great ideas that they have. Yeah. And so I'm quite inspired by their incompetence in a comedic way, and remind myself that I don't want to be those people. Yeah. I want to make sure things happen. And the second thing is I'm my biggest self-critic. And so I always think about where I want to be in 5 years, and I'm constantly chasing that. So 5 years ago, when I was 23, sad face, I had a vision of where I wanted to be. 5 years later, I'm not there. So I reiterate and I say, 5 years, I want to be this person. I'm constantly chasing, and I don't think I'll ever be where I really want to get to, but that's the best way of never stopping.
Well, I think people are, I think they found that there's greatest happiness in anticipation as opposed to actually achieving a lot of things. So, you know, you get a lot of joy from planning and looking forward to things, as opposed to when you get there, perhaps it can be a bit of a disappointment.
And I think people are scared of that. They're scared of the disappointment, and they're scared of things not working. And it's also the same thing in schools. You know, people are scared of labeling things as mistakes or failures. And, you know, no one's expecting a quick fix of that mindset. But really, I've had so many mistakes. I've failed so many times. But all of those have led to me learning more. And it sounds cliche, but it's so true.
So yeah, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Jan, so far. And thank you, everybody, for coming. My name is Ben. I'm a product manager at Nesta and have created Rocket Fund. Before we start, I just want to ask you guys a question. What did you dream of doing when you were at school?
Train driver.
Ambitious. Anyone else? Yeah, what did you dream of doing?
Stock market.
Anyone else?
Archaeologist.
Cool. Okay. So I always dreamt of going to space. We haven't figured out how to do that yet, but we have figured out a way to fuel imagination in the classroom, we think. So we're building this crowdfunding platform for schools called Rocket Fund. And that the reason we're doing it is because we want to enable teachers to buy what they think will have the most impact on their students and connect them with their wider community. We started off last year looking at trying to bridge the gap between the technology sector and the education sector. And we noticed there's a huge range of amazing things going on in the technology, especially the education technology sector, many of which Jan and Edspace and Emerge are investing in and supporting, and they're based right here at Edspace. Unfortunately, that's also set against nationwide budget cuts and fairly tough time for schools. IT budgets have been cut year on year, and we realised that the average teacher has very little budget at all for themselves. The classic story was £500, and most of it goes on photocopying. So it's very hard for a teacher to buy this stuff that people are producing and has been invested in. There's a couple of ways that teacher schools can fund very traditionally, but there's only so many biscuits you can buy or sell to buy an iPad or whatever else you want to do. So we also realised there isn't really any use for a good modern platform for connecting schools with businesses or individual private donors who might want to support their local school. So we had to think and explore and look across the pond and look at what's going on in the US. We discovered a charity called Donors Choose, who has been around 16 years actually, and have raised $500 million for schools. 114 million of that was last year alone. And 50% of it is match funding from businesses, foundations, and wealthy individuals. So we saw them. We were blown away by the statistics and the success they've had. And we called them up. I took the CEO and the CFO and said, do you want to come to the UK? Sadly, maybe not so sadly, he said no. But then he did say, we'll be happy to help you. So we've been working with them really closely for the last 4 months, just basically Skype calls every month or so to check in and learn how they did it and figure out how we can bring it to the UK. So we did a pilot. We built a platform which looks like this. And did a pilot on Christmas with 10 schools all around the UK, one of which is here, I'll introduce in a second. And we had no idea what to expect. You know, we didn't know if this was going to work in the UK. But amazingly it did. We had 10 schools, 7 of them hit their targets, and one school hit the target within 2 weeks. One of the most interesting schools was only spaced 2 miles from here, Newington Green Primary School. And it was Donna, who's in the audience today. And she raised £1,500 for VR headsets for her class. And I think the best way to present anything is to let her do the talking. So I'm going to show you a video we created about her story.
My name's Donna Shaw, and I'm a computing specialist at Newington Green Primary School. Our school is two form entry. We're from age 2 to 11. We are mixed ethnicities. We've got 472 children currently on roll. They're currently, I think, 76% are on pupil premium. We had 3 iPods and we had 1 headset that could be used for VR. You're talking 10 children while on 1 iPod. It doesn't work. I mean, now we've got a set of 10, 1 for 3 children if we're working as a whole class. Having augmented reality that can bring things alive, that can actually position them, if you're thinking about going on an expedition to another country. We had children in year 3 going to Rome, and it's like a lot of our children would never have the opportunity to go to Rome for whatever reason. But having them and seeing them walking down, walking into the Colosseum, their faces, the sounds that they were listening to, that's why I knew that's the area I wanted to go down.
There's no word to describe it. It's too good. It's indescribable.
What's the best thing you've seen?
I think VR makes a difference to our lessons because it just helps us visualise it way more and it just helps you feel like you're actually there.
I don't use VR at home because it's very expensive.
I was very surprised by who donated. We had local council. We also had a company in Yorkshire.
So without Rocket Fund, I couldn't be able to have VRs, ARs, the iPods and all that technology that we have right now.
To any donors out there, I would say big thanks, big thumbs up, and
thank you. The people who donated to Rocket Fund, you're all legends.
Thank you, Donna. So yeah, that's what we've done so far. We've raised £8,000 for 7 schools, and it impacted about, there was 2,000 pupils who benefited from that first pilot. And I just want to reiterate that sort of, there's a classic argument we've observed amongst in the tech community against pro-tech and anti-tech, and that this Rocket Fund isn't for anything, basically. We match fund tech products in the first round, but in the future, it depends on what the match funders want to support, but more importantly, what teachers want to fundraise for. So the value of it is, it's empowering teachers to buy what they think will have the biggest impact on the students' education, and then connecting them with their local community and their own network as well. So what's next is this thing we've been talking about all night, and why we've invited everyone here, is the 1 Mile Project. So we wanted to take this next to like a step further, and I've been working with EdSpace for a long time, and they had this great idea about supporting the sort of 61 schools around with their children in mile radius of here. So yeah, our aim is to engage, hopefully, ideally 61 of them, but we'll see how it goes, and raise enough money from the local businesses to match fund their projects, which basically means a school is capped at £1,500 per project, and if it was match funded, it would be £700. The teacher only has to raise £750 per project. There's three sort of ways you can get involved. If you're a business and you want to match on your local school or a few schools, fantastic. Or if you have a bit more money and want to become a founding partner, then even better. If you're an education company, you're also welcome to match fund. We've already had two, which is kind of brilliant. They're here tonight, Busu and Pytop. They've already donated £900 each to match fund two schools, which is brilliant. Thank you so much. But Rocket Fund also provides a great way for you to showcase your products. So if you want to create an offer, which we can present to schools when they go through the process of creating a pitch, then yeah, please get in touch. And finally, teachers, get involved and come and create a project. That's all I have to say. So next is a more interesting discussion with Sophie Bailey. Thank you very much.
And welcome this evening. My name is Sophie Bailey and I'm the founder of the EdTech podcast. And I just thought it might be worth mentioning that those who may have thought they were coming out for the Mile High Club, sorry to disappoint, but that's not the case, but we're going to have a great evening anyway. This panel is an issue close to my heart because when I launched the podcast last year, in April, the first three episodes were dedicated to the turnaround story of education in Hackney. So I initially interviewed the principal of Hackney Community College here, so Ian Ashman, who's now the CEO of the Association of Colleges. I interviewed the CEO of Here East, and also Jeremy from Hackney Learning Trust. And the idea really was to investigate to what extent education and tech are working with one another to collaborate. And the consensus really that came out of those discussions was that there were pockets of innovation that were happening, but that they were still pockets and that there was more that could be done and perhaps more quickly. So that's enough from me. We'll come back to those results in a minute, but I'd like to hand over now to some introductions. Michelle, would you like to kick off?
Okay, brilliant. Hi everyone. I am Michelle Thomas. I'm the executive head of a group of three schools that I think you can see out there here in Hackney, Graysbrook, Shacklewell and Woodbury Down. And we're super proud to be here tonight on the panel. And we're very proud of our use of technology, and we're a firm believer in the use of technology. We're the only schools in the world that have Apple Distinguished School Status all at once, so all three schools received that recently. But we're not just about the use of Apple, we're about the use of technology to transform learning and teaching, and we're really proud of what we do. So we're excited to be here tonight to talk a little bit more about how important it is to teach the very young children how to use technology and when to use it, and that it's a really important tool to have in our schools.
And
we just had a visit from the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook. We had to get that one in, so that's really important for us to see that. We're really proud. And I think some of my heads are here too to say that. Yeah, we're proud, yeah. And he doesn't travel lightly, by the way.
Awesome. So now I'd like to move on to Martin.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, I've met Tim Cook, yeah.
Do you want this back?
I held his water bottle as well. Because he doesn't carry anything.
Okay.
I'm finished. I'm over my moment now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Martin Buck, head of secondary at the Hackney Learning Trust, the education service for Hackney in the London Borough, and I'm one of the leadership team for education. I work with Michelle, who is one of our high-performing executive head teachers in an authority that is, can I say this? Yeah, number one in the country at the moment. It's always dangerous, I think, when one sort of prunes oneself, as it were, particularly in a context when the education landscape is pretty tough. It's not going to get any easier. And we also know that there are amazingly good schools in Islington. There are amazingly good schools. Yeah, exactly. And there are amazingly good schools in Tower Hamlets and exceptional schools in the geographical area you've chosen to do this amazing project. We, as a local education authority, would wish to support this project. We would like to be involved in it in some way. not in any way other than to enthuse those schools that you haven't made contact with at the moment to participate, because clearly this is innovation. We think we're an innovative authority. We're one of the few in the country at the moment where people still work for us to do consultancy and advisory work for teaching and learning. We are an authority that says we have some of the best schools in the highest performing in primary and in secondary because we work in a local partnership. And in 2017, that's not exactly flavour of the month for local authorities. So we are an exception to the rule at the moment. We're very proud of being that exception, and we're delighted to be here tonight to participate in this great event.
Martin? Okay, let's move on to Ben. So Ben from Ministry of Stories. Thank you, Ben.
Hi, I'm Ben, co-founder and co-director of the Ministry of Stories. The Ministry of Stories is a writing and mentoring centre for children and young people. We work with schools in Tower Hamlets, Hackney and Islington, and with children in a very local area to us in kind of after-school writing clubs. So kind of broadly very much within that catchment area. We opened 6 years ago. We're based on an idea from America, which was really about changing the kind of dynamic in the class where children might be needing extra support with reading and writing by training volunteer writing mentors from the local community to get involved and provide that kind of one-to-one support that we feel really makes a difference. So in that 6 years, we've worked with over 10,000 children. We've trained 8,000 people to be volunteer writing mentors. We've been overwhelmed by the commitment and the involvement of people and the willingness to engage with the mission of the organisation. We've worked with some incredible partners, like writers from EastEnders coming in voluntarily to do writing workshops on writing soap opera. And we've done pretty much every form of writing that there is. And what we're really about is trying to communicate to children and young people that writing is possible for them. That literacy and all of these things are obviously important, but if you put into their mind that all of the things that they enjoy, like songs, games, books, TV, usually involve a writer or writing in some way or some form, that switches a light on into them understanding that it's something that they can potentially do. They may not go on to be professional writers, but that's not necessarily the most important thing. And more recently, what we've done is we've begun to explore how we can develop our work digitally. So we've had some support from Nesta over the last couple of years. They've been amazing, investing in a platform called the Story Engine, which was a sort of experimental project in the first instance to find out how much of what we actually do live in the building or in a classroom could be replicated through digital means. And we had some further funding last year to kind of look at the business model for that. And we feel very excited about what the potential of that might be. So I'm very happy to talk to anybody after the event about our mission or about that particular project.
Thank you, Ben. Toby, let's move on to you.
Lovely. Hi, guys. My name's Toby, and I work on the product development side for a company called Samlabs. We kind of create Lego for the future, or the intelligence of the internet, into these little blocks, so kids can build rock cars, they can build robots, they can build whatever their heart desires. And the idea is, up until this point, we've been very, very consumer-centric, until about a year ago, and then we kind of saw that actually there's this huge opportunity in the educational space where these kids are kind of experimenting and building these wacky things using our blocks, but we're not really helping to tailor that experience. And so my job is to help really create and cater and create a bespoke tailored solution for educators. So everything from dealing with lesson plans that are tailored around international syllabus to actually what's in the box, how everything's being stored, just making sure that the educator has an amazing experience, because we want to help build the next Elon Musks and the next Tony Starks in the classroom. So that's our exciting vision, and you know, hopefully there's a lot of wonderful educators in the room here, so hopefully we can catch up a little bit later on and see how Sam can help.
Last but not least, let's go to Daryl, because Ben, I think you introduced yourself earlier.
Hi guys, my name is Daryl. I'm the Vice President and Lead Software Engineer at PyTop. And at PyTop, we're trying to solve the issues that have been discussed today. So how do we get more kids into STEM education? And the predominant way we're trying to do this is by making it more affordable and by making it much more fun and engaging. So we built PyTop and PyTop Seed. They're a laptop and desktop based around the Raspberry Pi. The PyTop is a sort of build-it-yourself laptop. The desktop is the same version of a desktop of it. And we provide our own educational content that goes on top of it. So how do you code, how to do electronics, and sort of how they interact together, sort of code and electronics. So we are now a company of about 30. We span across China, where we have our factory, we're in the States and the UK. We ship to over 80 different countries, and we are in literally thousands of schools all over the world. So just touching on the things that have been spoken about today, so about impact, it's interesting because education hasn't changed much over the last sort of 100 years. If you look at the classroom, you've still got the teacher at the front, you still have the whiteboard, and you still have the books. And what's really required is a change in mindset for the teachers. And that's what we're trying to help facilitate as well. So we provide CPD to teachers to understand how to use the technology that's been developed over the last sort of 20 years. So iPads, the internet, PyTop, and how to like really make the most out of that. So yeah, that's my talk.
Okay, brilliant. I'll let you keep the microphone. So great introduction from all of our panelists. My first question, really going back to those live voting pie charts, and then thinking about, I mean, there's this quote from the former mayor of Hackney, Jules Pipe. So in Hackney, the education offer has gone from being probably the worst to becoming one of the best. Not just in London, but in the UK, but we cannot afford to be complacent. So my first question really is to Michelle and Martin from the primary and secondary perspective. What is the situation within your schools in the borough? And you know, if there are people here today that are excited to partner with you, which are the areas where you think actually, yeah, that's where we could really do some help and collaboration?
The education is going well up to this point, because we've had some very highly skilled teachers and some highly effective leaders in our schools. That's self-evident. The pressure on our schools now, as Michelle will testify, is keeping those people in our schools, yeah? Retaining them at a point when it is massively expensive to live in London, and we all know that. Yeah. So recruiting isn't so hard if you're an English teacher or a humanities teacher. If you're a science or a maths teacher, then recruitment now is pretty tough. Now, what's really that to do with this focus of this fantastic initiative tonight, I guess, is around the extent to which we can make life easier for our teachers, support them in their own professional development, yeah, underpin the work they're doing, help them believe that they can be creative, in a national curriculum that actually isn't encouraging them to be very creative. Yeah? A national curriculum that wants to assess them by asking them to pick up a pen, write as much as they can write from the age of 4 through to the age of 18. So the actual structure and organisation of this thing that we want to get to be first in the world at doesn't have built in very much work around creativity. That's not to say we don't have creative teachers, that's not to say we don't have creative classrooms, but you have to work very hard at it, because the design of the thing that we want to go towards isn't explicit. So we need your help to help our teachers be as creative as they can be. Whether that's in science, whether that's in maths, whether that's in reading, it doesn't matter where it is. They have to help us identify where they can be creative. And you know, because you've heard already, that we've got great examples in Michelle's school where they are doing that. But it's not because the very curriculum that's on offer lays it out on a plate, because it doesn't.
Michelle, would you want to give some details on some of those projects?
I think the most important thing for me in my schools is about collaboration, and that's why we use technology, because it's a tool for collaboration. And does it replace teachers? Of course not. It doesn't make a teacher any better. In fact, it can, you know, can sometimes make teachers a little worse because they think it's going to transform something. And I think the most important thing for me is working with my staff and actually connecting with people. So something like tonight is really important because, I mean, I've never heard of Rocket Fund, and I'm super excited now to be able to put my bid up there and, you know, and get what, you know, get what we need. And I think the more people that are out there that want to connect with schools, and, you know, I've got connections, I think that the schools can be a very busy place, and we can be very inward facing. And I think it's really important to have events like this that help us to be more outward facing. And because there's not a teacher in the world that doesn't want the best for their children and their schools, but it's about being able to access that. And I think the biggest thing that we're all facing at the moment, I think was alluded to at the very beginning by yourself, was about the funding. I mean, you know, it is very tight and there isn't much around, but it's about the priorities of a school, and I think the priorities of making sure that we're providing the best possible opportunities. And you know, companies like yourselves and yourselves are the way forward. And I think the more we talk about it, the more we publicise it, we get the message out there. A lot of times schools aren't engaging us because they just simply don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key thing. You know, I'm in this borough and I didn't know some of the things that are available that I just heard about quite quickly tonight. So it's about getting the message out there, and that's our job. And I think that's what we'll definitely do and make those connections.
If money wasn't an object, what would you do in your schools?
No, lots of stuff. I think it isn't about lots of stuff. I think it's more about the education, because, you know, to do what we've done in our three schools is pretty amazing, but we had to change mindsets, and that's the key to what you're doing. You know, I'm Australian. You know, we come from a mindset where we're going to have a go. That's what we do in Australia. And encouraging people to do that can be scary because, as Martin says, you've got a lot of external pressures onto you. And it's about understanding how to change those mindsets with staff. And I think that's the most important thing to do, because it's not easy to know when to use technology and when not to use it, and to be innovative. You know, what does that actually mean? And I think that's the most important thing that I believe, you know, that our schools have to do, because it's, you know, just the word innovative can mean a whole round of things, and actually sometimes it doesn't mean using technology. So it's about making sure that we understand the mindset, that things are going to look a little bit different. And that's what I'm very passionate about, to explain that, to showcase that, and to show that doesn't mean you're not going to do well academically, because I'm super proud of my results in my school. One of my schools is here, is in the top 3% of the country, and it's, you know, really proud of you down there, Miss. She's right at the back, my head teacher there, of Shacklewell. You know, so it doesn't mean because you're doing something different, you're going to, at the expense of something else. But that comes from a mindset change, and that's something that we've, you know, got that responsibility to do for our children.
I think also, kind of continuing on that point, obviously there's been a bit of shift change, especially, let's say, in the computing section, where we were talking a little bit before, coding suddenly being integrated in, and there's a huge amount of teachers that have this huge fear that they have actually no idea of what they can potentially build and do and create, because they didn't do it back at school. Mm. And so there's a new generation of kids who actually technically know more than the teachers now. And that's why ourselves and PyTop and a lot of great other initiatives, what we're doing is we're trying to make sure there's a better experience for teachers, so it's more engaging, and it's a lot easier for them to actually understand how it works as well. So in a way, our tool is developed for kids, but it's just as much for the teachers to actually really understand some of these key principles that are important throughout the syllabus.
Ben from Ministry of Stories, you and I were speaking on the phone, and I just wondered if you could share some of your experiences of working with local schools and what you do, and, you know, how you'd like to perhaps give advice to people who are thinking of partnering in a similar way as well.
I mean, we chose to be here 6 years ago for two important reasons for the organisation. We wanted to find somewhere where we thought the work that we were doing would have genuine benefit. And so we established, through talking to people like Happy Learning Trust, that there was a real need. There were a lot of children living locally. There were kind of issues around literacy. But we also knew that in this particular area there were a lot of creative industry companies and tech companies and design companies who were all existing in broadly in a very small area, broadly side by side. And one of the things that struck me after only about a term of working here was that one of the local teachers said to us, I saw one of my pupils talking to one of your volunteers, and I realised that it was the first time in 10 years of being here that I'd actually seen an engagement between one of my children and one of the people who worked in one of those industries. And there is a sort of sense that there are these kind of parallel communities. I'm sure there's a huge amount going on that we as Ministry of Stories don't know about. But that observation by the teacher really struck me 6 years ago, that what we were trying to provide was a way in which the children who could really benefit from skills and experience and understanding and amazing creativity and knowledge could be connected up with people who were really interested and willing and wanting to go engage and learn from those children as well. You know, they, as we said, they sometimes know better. They have amazing imaginations. A lot of our volunteers say to us, when I come in and I work with your children, I suddenly realise how limited my imagination actually is. So, you know, what we're trying to provide is that kind of hub, if you know what I mean. And so that's what we continue to do. We've been quite shameless about the fact that we think that people who work with us get a huge amount back from what they actually do through the ministry. And we kind of continue to do that in all of our projects. I've got examples of some of the kind of finished products and publications. Some of them are sort of ephemeral, but a lot of the time the real value in what we're trying to do is to kind of work towards a finished product and publication. So the children actually get immense validation of seeing their imagination or their writing actually exist in the real world for a real audience. And that can be digitally, it can be in a live performance, or it can be in a publication. And once they see that, something really shifts in their engagement with writing, and that's really what we're about.
Thank you. And Toby, we also spoke about the murder mile in Homerton, and not that things have sort of changed completely, but it's interesting to think that where you're based is now called sort of the Maker Mile. So can you tell us a little bit about the businesses that are there?
Absolutely.
And what they do? And
you know, you've got this incredible creative hub on one street. You know, The Tech Will Save Us, Machine Room, Open Desk. There's all of these incredible creative initiatives in the same area, and you could really only find it in a great area like Hackney, where you have all of these incredible creative engaged people who want to build, but they don't know where to channel it. And you know, using this once kind of derelict area, really creating it into the new hub in a way. You know, it's we had during the London Design Week, I think it was last year, a number of key ambassadors across the globe were actually walking around, and they did tours using Machine Room because they see Maker Mile now as actually one of the areas that you need to go to. Now, if they did that 5-10 years ago, that would, you know, they would laugh. Now we're at this stage where, you know, Hackney is really pioneering in a lot of ways this sort of young underbelly of creativity.
Can you explain whereabouts that is as well for everyone?
Yeah, of course. Cambridge Heath Station, like just off, there's a canal, obviously, the canal, and we're just right next to that.
And Pytop, obviously, just around the corner. I think if anyone didn't notice yesterday, the government released the UK digital strategy, and in the appendix there's a whole page on education. And noted in there were companies like Carno, obviously based a bit further down, but based in Stepney Green, but also Tech Will Save Us, in the form that they did a hat tip to the BBC Microbit, which they partnered with. But again, you guys are just around the corner from Cambridge Heath Station, aren't you? So can you tell us a little bit about that experience and which schools you may have collaborated with locally as well?
Right, yeah, so we're actually 5 minutes from you guys, I reckon. And we're in this place called Containerville, and there's like a couple popping up around the place. And we're actually in the same space with a whole bunch of other ed tech companies, which is really cool. So we like talk about different ideas and like what the innovations are happening in ed tech. We've even got a sort of school coming, not school, like a maker place around us where they teach how to code, how to do robotics, and sort of getting around in all these up and coming technologies. Interestingly enough, actually, we reached out to loads of schools around the area to try and sort of ask them, hey, look, we built this really cool tech, and we want to show it to you, and like we don't want to sell it, we just want to see like what you think of it, because you know what we build might not be like we think it's really good, but we need to make sure that it is. Can you like tell us what you think? And there seems to be sort of this not rejection, but like apprehension of trying to use this new technology. And it'd be interesting to hear you guys, your thoughts on like how do you change the mindset of people who are maybe like they don't really quite understand how to use this new technology. And like how to get them engaged with you.
Okay, it's a slow process, you know, and I think you start very, you know, you start small. There'll be the, you know, it's like the desert island, isn't it? And there's lots of people that jump in, they're swimmers. And you're always going to have people that are, we call them the flag huggers, that stay there, that aren't so sure, they put their foot in. And it's finding what works, you know, and I think never to give up. My belief in the mindset, like with the children, you know, I believe every child can achieve, and that's as you know, that's our mantra in our schools. And we don't believe that, you know, just because where they come from is going to set them on a path for a certain type of life. So we constantly are reflecting on that. And I think with teachers, the reason why they don't engage sometimes is because they're scared, because new things are scary and change is difficult. You know, for children, change all the time, they're easy. It's the staff that sometimes can take a little bit more time. And it's the small steps that have the big impact. It's those small things. And I think, I mean, I knew you were going to say that. When you said you went to schools and they went, no thanks, that's a lot. Because I'm thinking, how many times a day do I hang up the phone to people? Probably quite a few. And I think it's just getting it out there a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's interesting because in the international community, so like schools that are slightly more forward thinking, like that's like something that they're very open to. But then you're saying, so for schools who perhaps haven't been exposed so much, just keep on going at it.
You just gotta keep on going. You just gotta keep going because I think everyone comes to change at a different point. And everyone, you know, will come once they see. Sometimes people need to see it working somewhere first. And I think that's what I would suggest. I suggest to lots of people when they come to say, I said the best place is to come see it in action. Yeah. And that is where teachers and, you know, educators will say, okay, I can see how it might work if I change it in this way or that way to work in my context. Just keep going.
So yeah. I'd like to add to that, actually, because I was at the original, or one of the workshops where you were developing Rocket Fund, and so there were a variety of people there, so teachers, and I was asking all the annoying questions at the beginning. But I think it would be interesting, Ben, to get your perspective on, you know, there were different thoughts about the project. And perhaps concerns from educators. And I think, you know, one of the primary ones, and perhaps goes back to your question, is around time. So, you know, just in there, you know, you're thinking about what's the criteria that perhaps is of concern to me around, you know, what I'm getting measured against. So I just wondered if you could relay some of the educator feedback in the development process.
Yeah, so it was fairly controversial when we first pitched earlier. The two things people were concerned about, well, one was obviously lack of time. The other ones were you're replacing government funding and how the portal was going to afford this. So the ways that we avoided those, the government funding bit, this is supposed to be an innovation fund, not a replacement fund. So it's a top-up. It's a way of affording those things you wouldn't expect to be part of a traditional school budget and trying things. And if you do like it, maybe you can move some budgets around the following year. And we also capped each one of the questions on Glister. I noticed was how much can you raise? We cap it at £1,500 per project initially. So yeah, those two things were the initial concerns. But back to the barriers using technology in the classroom. So before we started Rocket Fund, I had spent 3 months doing research into what the barriers are to using technology. Number three was budget. But then below that, there were things like lack of infrastructure, so lack of Wi-Fi and devices, lack of support, so lack of training, and lack of knowledge, which led to a complete lack of confidence amongst some teachers. And finally, lack of time. You know, teachers that we all know are extremely busy. And that was probably my biggest concern about how I was going to persuade teachers to do this when they were so busy. The support, there's all those other barriers, there's a bunch of solutions which we're kind of hopefully build in the future to help with those. The time thing with Rocket Fund, fortunately, a real nice surprise that we learned during the pilot was that actually the process itself has educational value. So the teachers got the kids involved, the kids loved it, and it was worth doing even if it didn't reach the target, but I mean, most of them did. And it also had a careers advisor did it for one school, and she said it was good content for their CV. They learned about crowdfunding, they learned about entrepreneurship, and about marketing. So if you can create educational value in the process itself of doing something, it's great to start something brand new.
Yeah, because the big stepping stone that we always come across is this word of mouth. It's so incredibly key for educators. It's like, we've got it in the classroom, that's why we recommend it to four other teachers. So, you know, it's actually kind of just starting that tree and trying to get as many branches in as many schools as possible. And so, you know, now, you know, we're similar to you guys, you know, working internationally, we've been able to now, you know, across Europe and Asia and stuff, but the starting point was the block, and once those sort of floodgates are open, that's when life's a lot easier. But you've just got to kind of push past. Yeah, you've got to find those kind of ambassador teachers who are like willing to take a little bit of a gamble, who, you know, probably were tinkerers and inventors back at school, that like the second they touched the kit, they were like, I can create so many incredible things with this. And, you know, one thing that we have with some of the teachers we work is they're actually, without anything to do with us, back when it was a consumer product a year and a bit ago, that site, they were actually already developing lesson plans, completely nothing to do with us. And so, you know, this is 8 weeks, 9 weeks that they're developing these incredible, you know, incredible infrastructure around what SAM can do for them in the classroom, which had absolutely nothing to do with us. And that's what gets us excited, when we run into those educators and we're like, you're amazing, we need lots of you, you know. Mm-hmm.
So I think what we're going to do now is we're going to jump into some of the audience questions just to kind of finish off the panel. So first one, is there any way that investors can help other than just financially? So Ben, I guess that's for you.
Is that for me? interesting question. I don't know what else they have to offer, they're just called investors, but obviously, if they got money, it'd be fantastic. One of the future hopes that we talked to lots of other crowdfunding platforms before we built Rocket Fund, and one of the observations was that after people donated towards a project, they were far more likely to want to help out the people they donated towards. So you can, the future feature is probably going to be, as well as donating, you can offer to volunteer, and then the teacher can request certain skills or say what they need help with.
So let's skip to, how does a school get a project on the platform?
So the platform's live right now, and so you just go to www.rocket.fund and click get started, and you can literally create projects, and then we'll walk you through the process. So once you start creating a project, we can see it, and once you submit it, we'll know you're ready for us to review it.
And here's a good question, what if a school falls just outside of 1 mile but is a Hackney school?
So we would love to have you involved. We're obviously prioritising the 61 within this mile radius, but like, get involved, start creating projects, and if we can get you in,
of course you can. Win. Yes.
Okay, so just to finish very, very quickly, thank you very much all for your contributions. Can you give a sort of 30-second prize of your 2017 objective? So what you're all focusing on this year, just to kind of wrap up?
The next 6 months is to try and prove our final assumptions with Rocket Fund, which is, one is, will businesses match fund school projects? And then test the go-to-market strategy, focusing on a local geographical area. And after that, we want to expand this to other locations in the country.
I guess to support our schools to keep producing fantastic young people who are gonna be creative and innovative and go on to make a mark in the world, and to do that, to support our schools to try and work with our teachers to make them more confident in this area.
What we'd like to do is we want to trial and test out the Story Engine, which is this creative writing, extracurricular creative writing club that you can set up in your own school, library or art centre, and to find out what works for people in that. So we're offering 100 free trials through our tech partner, so if you're interested in finding out more about it as a project, please get in touch with me or talk to me afterwards.
Try and find as many of those ambassador teachers as we can throughout the year, and make sure that we continue developing, not just what we think, because we're all 20 to 30 year olds, you know, locked away from it, but making sure that it is educators front and center, by educators for educators, which is what we've done for everything that we're working on at the moment with this kit, but just making sure that educators are always a part of the voice.
I think it's for us is to keep opening our doors, because we're a very open set of schools, to people to come in and take a look and work with other people, because we want children to be outward facing and to keep going and, you know, just really grabbing the skill set that they've got to be able to access the world as they grow up. And so it's really important for us to keep collaborating. And now I'm going to see Donna at Newington Green, because she's just up the road from us, to go and see how the VR's going, because I think that's where, you know, that's what happens in schools.
Yeah.
Schools love to collaborate, and teachers get on board when they see it happening by someone like them. So it's important for us to keep our schools open to all opportunities.
Right, so we're going to continue to try and impact more students' lives to make them understand how technology can be used with all the different subjects of STEM education. We're going to continue to try and educate teachers on how you can use technology in the classroom to really, again, teach STEM education.
Okay, so thank you very much. Let's give a round of applause for having us.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to experience a live podcast firsthand before it hits the podcast feed, and you're in London on Monday the 19th of June, don't forget to check out our event at Nesta HQ on the 19th. Otherwise, if you want to mix with other listeners, join our new Facebook group online, where we'd love you to connect and hear your feedback. Have a wonderful week and see you next time. Thank you to our sponsors, Class Central. It's been more than half a decade since free online courses from Stanford kicked off the modern MOOC or massive online open courses movement. Since then, more than 700 universities around the world have launched MOOCs, used by over 60 million people. Gaining insight into this fast-paced world is worth spending time on, especially for those implicated by such changes. That's where Class Central comes in. Class Central launched at the end of 2011 and has kept track of the MOOC space right from the beginning. Not only does it list 7,000 plus courses, but the excellent MOOC Report blog has deep analysis on what's up, down, new, or just slightly left field. With over 500 articles written, Class Central has the most comprehensive coverage of the MOOC industry. You can go and check that out at www.class-central.com/report and let me know what you think.